to the Parentpreneur Accelerator podcast, helping you build the business of your dreams while having time with the family you love. Here is your host, Cyril, the entrepreneur and proud dad, Alexis Kingsbury.
Thank you very much for your help, Ethan.
Hi there, it's Alexis here, and in this week's episode, I'm interviewing Amanda Overend. Amanda is mum to three young boys and the owner of Books and Pieces, which makes buying books easy for families who want to enjoy books with their children. Amanda's background is in sports PR and media, and more recently, education PR. Whilst pregnant in 2012, she set up Books and Pieces, which she ran alongside her day job and I believe having a third child as well. And then in Christmas 2016, she left her day job to go full time with the business. Since then, she's been steadily growing Books and Pieces. And then this September was another turning point for her because her youngest started school. So she decided to launch a second business called Stocking Fairy, which provides wrapped Christmas stocking gifts in the time that's freed up. So in this episode, we're going to discuss running a business around the family and how Amanda has managed her time. We'll also talk about standing out in a crowded marketplace and how Amanda's used her experience and skills in PR to do that. And we'll also talk about Amanda's new business, Stocking Fairy, and how she came up with the idea and how she then tested that before getting started. And we'll probably, if we get time, hopefully get to talk about reading with kids and her tips around that as well. Amanda, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, no worries. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, let's start off by with your kind of background in PR and media. Tell us a bit more about that and how that then led into starting a business.
Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, as you've mentioned, my background is sports PR, and I've worked in professional sport. That was kind of my first role post university, and then I stayed within that arena. And then over time and having the kids, that was when I moved into education PR, because sports, as you may well be aware, just isn't particularly family friendly with the kind of hours that you're expected to do. So that was kind of the first, I guess, family based decision that I made. And then obviously was working at a university for a period of time, finished up there as PR manager before leaving, as you mentioned, 2 years ago to go full time with my business. But in that interim period, after having my first child, I've got three boys, I came up with the idea for Books and Pieces and was running that alongside the day job for a number of years, so 4 years in fact, before I took the leap and wow. And left.
That's fantastic. And as regular listeners of this podcast know, and those have been part of our Facebook group, you know, I'm generally incredibly pro starting the new business alongside the existing form of income because of the benefits that provides in both reducing your risk, but also allowing you to make long term decisions rather than short term ones. However, 4 years is a long time for you to do that. So how did that work for you, and what prevented you from jumping sooner? How were you able to make that work? Because I think there's a lot of people out there that would assume that you can't build a business whilst also having a full-time job, and particularly if you've then got the young kids and so on.
Yeah, do you know what, I think when I first set it up, it wasn't, when I look back, I think in the back of my mind there was this idea, could I turn this into a business that will allow me to spend more time with my family and bring me in an income so that I can be flexible? But after setting it up, I didn't really think about that, if that makes sense. So I like the idea. I think, you know, I wanted to set up this business. I saw an opportunity for providing discounted books and selling to families. Obviously, I'm a real pro books, and I've seen what they can do for my kids too. But there wasn't that service wasn't out there. So I started it. I initially sold books for all children's ages. I did some real local small events, and I think I was just playing at it, if I'm being honest. I was doing it alongside the job. I was doing it as something for me, I guess, after having the kids, and something for me to sort of play with, grow, or what have you. And then on mat leave, obviously I've had two mat leaves when I had the business. So I was still tinkering during that time. So it kind of helped, you know, keep my mind going and not just totally suck into baby zone. But yeah, for a long while, I didn't think that I wasn't building it. You hear some people who are very tactical with what they're doing, and they're building up this business. So within 12 months or what have you, they can leave the day job and set up and fly with this business. But for me, it wasn't like that. It was kind of after a few years, I think, when I realized the pressure of work and the juggling, and I was working part time by that point. But it was the whole, I was dropping my kids off at two or three different places on the route to work. I was rushing into work, trying to get as much as I could done within the limited time I had, feeling guilty when I left work, when other people were still sat at their desks, rushing home again, picking up my kids, and then straight into mummy mode. And I just thought, you know what, there's got to be something more than this. And it was at that point I suddenly remembered the initial thought was, can I build a business that fits around my family? And so I had, in 2016, I decided, right, that was my think big year, I called it. And I just looked at how I could scale up the business. So I started doing big baby shows to try and get my brand out there. And I thought, you know, can I make money from this? Is it something that can sustain me, that will enable me to leave my day job? And so that was a real testing year for me. And then over the summer, I thought, you know what, I've just got to do it. I can't, it's not sustainable. I have no childcare in the village where I live. My kids are at a small village school. I had friends that were helping me out. I had a couple of mates that would help when I had one child at school. When I had two children at school, there was just one mate that was helping me. And my husband was having to work shorter hours as well to help support the childcare. And whereas before I'd always thought, you know what, when my kids are at school, that's my opportunity to get back into my career and start moving in my career again. I kind of realized that actually when my kids were at school, that was the death knell for my career, because I just couldn't do it all. I couldn't be there for them and grow my career. And so all of those things came together, I guess, and just made me realize, right, I've got to do something. And when I looked at what could give, because I was giving up a lot of time doing my books, going to events on weekends and obviously working at it when I came home, I realized actually of all the things, the books was the one thing that would give me the flexibility and that I could grow and that I could be there for my family and do what I wanted to do, really. So so that was kind of it, decision made. And then obviously I worked towards leaving work, in fact, almost 2 years ago. And I've not looked back since. It definitely, although I loved my work, but without a doubt, it's been the best decision that I made.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that, Amanda. And the way in which you kind of paint that timeline makes it so clear, like the thought processes and the challenges that you're going through. And I think certainly the challenges that you faced with sort of balancing the corporate and trying to build that career and spend time with the kids and so on is something that a lot of people identify with. What about the at the time business/hobby that you had kind of got on the side? Was there ever a time that you felt like that was creating a problem for you, or was it because of your attitude of it being more like a sort of hobby at the background that meant that you never felt that kind of commitment and therefore it wasn't able to have that same kind of hold? What how did it feel like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, it was an extra pressure, because while I was off doing events, it meant that my husband had to either have time off work or, you know, he'd been at work all week and then he was having to solo care for the kids when I was away. And, you know, especially if I came back and it hadn't been a great day, and you'd be like, oh, all that effort for, you know, what is the return on that? Is it really worth it? So I guess, yeah, it would be silly to say no, there was no stress, because, again, you know, the extra hours I'd have to put in the evenings to work on the business. But yeah, I think that was where it got me to the turning point. And I think if I hadn't had that, I wouldn't be sat here now running my own business. I'd have still found a way, you know, if I didn't have that extra pressure, I'd have still been going into work. I'd have found a way to look after the kids and I'd have still been on that sort of hamster wheel. Whereas now I just think, you know, without going through that, it wouldn't have given me this great opportunity. And that also a network of other people. I think once you're in, you know, in the sphere of entrepreneurs and other people setting up their businesses, running it around families, you really see all the opportunities that are out there, and it's just really inspiring. So yes, to answer your question, it did put extra stress on everything, but it was kind of that enabled me to leave my day job and to really think about, you know, doing it seriously.
Fantastic. And how different is it now? So because you mentioned that sort of, you know, it's a blessing that now that you can do that, what does that look like? How different is that in terms of now giving you that that freedom and flexibility to be able to both have the business and earn the income and, you know, build the career, but also get time with the family?
Yeah, I mean, it's not you know, I think I thought, oh, I'll leave work and it'll be amazing. I'll have all this time to spend on my business. And, you know, it's almost, in some ways, it's more stressful in that when I was at work, it was very clear. I was very focused on the key tasks that I needed to do for my business, you know, to sort of keep it ticking over. Whereas now that I'm doing it full time, if you like, it's kind of, there's so many things I could do that you just kind of get lost in a sea of, you know, of not only opportunities and ideas for your business, but there's also the practical side of running a business. So last year, I guess that was all about learning how do you run a business? Like, what do I need to do? Being accountable, managing my stock properly, you know, all my finances. And so that in itself has been a massive learning curve. But the beauty of it all is that, you know, every day I can go and pick my kids up from school. I can go to their Christmas performance or their, you know, French cafe or what have you, whatever they're doing. And I remember last summer was great because it was the first time that I'd not had to go through that challenge of managing childcare and putting in a schedule of who's off, who's looking after the kids, what group are they going to. And I could just be off for 6 weeks and enjoy it with the kids. So just having that balance is so much better. But I'm not painting this, it's amazing picture, because it's still really hard work. And I just think as parents as well, we're just programmed to be guilty whatever we're doing, you know, guilty that I'm away at a weekend and not spending time with my children. But then I have to remind myself, I'm there every single day. I'm taking them to school, I'm picking them up from school, I'm there in the holidays. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's like I said before, it's definitely the right decision that I've made. And it's an exciting one now because I'm the master of our family's destiny, really, and growing the business and building something that will really enable us to do what we want, you know, go away for 6 weeks in the summer if we want to or what have you. So yeah, that's kind of, I guess, a day to day. But with three young boys, they're 4, 6 and 8, it is a little bit crazy. So so I go from a day of, you know, work and what have you to just total full-blown carnage most evenings.
Fair enough. And I think the it's a really useful lesson for all of us that I think that I've had many times, which is in the early days of the change, or in the days leading up to the big change, like leaving a job and just going into the business, you can suddenly see all the time and the space and, you know, creative thinking space, etc., that you're going to have. And then of course you get into it, and there's a load of stuff that you kind of hadn't thought about, or indeed, you know, Parkinson's law takes effect, where actually the work just fills the available time. And yeah, suddenly you're thinking, wait, I thought I was going to have all that time available, and now I seem to be even more busy. And, you know, I've even seen it with people who then decide, oh, you know what, I'm going to do 4 days a week on the business rather than 5 days. And unless you put something in to that fifth day a week, it's so easy that the you know, the time just gets eaten up again. And I think for you, it sounds like things like the pickup and the drop off and the key kids events and so on have given you that structure to make sure that even though you feel the pressure, even though it's not like this blissful dream where you do a couple of hours work a week or a day and then the rest of the time's with your kids, like, you're still getting so much. Is that kind of accurate, or what else has helped you make sure that you do get that balance that you wanted?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, there's a natural, when you know, when you are doing the drop off and pick up, you've got natural deadlines in your day. You know, my big challenge from January really is to be more structured, because I just want to, I was very much looking forward to my youngest starting school this year, because up until the summer, he was only in preschool for three mornings a week. So I've been working on very limited time for quite a while now. So I kind of saw September as this massive opportunity where I'd have all this extra time. But, you know, stupidly, or not stupidly, but I launched another business. So kind of my time automatically got, that extra time that I could see got sucked up. So my challenge now is to put some really strong boundaries in place, really structure my working week from January so that I have actually got some time back for me. And, you know, and I can do those things that I just haven't done for 8 years as being a mum. You know, I can't go and do things for myself, or even just get some of the boring chores done so that when the kids are home, we can play games together or, you know, spend a bit more time together. But yeah, I mean, it is hard, but yeah, I guess it's just trying to prioritize what you need to achieve every day and being realistic. You know, it's not possible to do everything. And so when you start to feel yourself getting overwhelmed, or, you know, thinking, oh my God, I'm not succeeding, I haven't done this, because obviously what I found really interesting is, for me, there's so much that I haven't done, But then when I speak to friends or people, you know, who I know within my networks, and they'll say, wow, you've done, I keep seeing you all the time, you're doing amazing. And so it's just very interesting what we think about how we're doing compared to what other people who can see our business from the outside think. So I just think that we're so used to putting ourselves down and making it a challenge and, you know, just thinking what we don't do rather than celebrating what we do. So that's what I have, you know, keep reminding myself, I'm doing really well. I'm making really good big steps forwards. Look what I've achieved in this year. And can I mirror that and think where I could be this time next year? So, yeah, just being realistic about it, I guess, Alexis.
That's fantastic. And I think that's so true about the fact that as entrepreneurs, we tend to look at whatever we've done, like no matter how good your year has been or whatever, we all have a tendency to kind of look at it and say, oh, well, that was still only 50% of what I planned to achieve or what I could have achieved if X or, you know, if I didn't have this particular problem. And I think, as you say, through the eyes of others, it's often easier to kind of see how amazing what you have achieved is. And definitely identify with that where I look at your business and look at others and say, actually, for the time, it's amazing. Like the time and resources and then the outcome is absolutely phenomenal. And in fact, I'll share a story that perhaps some people may find reassuring as well, which is that through a mutual friend, I found out that even someone like Richard Branson has those moments where they look back and go, oh, but I wish I could have achieved this, or, you know, I've not done that well. And in the case of Branson, this particular example was that he was kind of reflecting on, you know, I've really missed out on this big internet thing. And, you know, like, oh, you know, Bezos and Zuckerberg and whatever, look what they've done and I haven't done that. And it's like, if someone like Richard Branson, the most well-known UK entrepreneur, one of the most in the world, like if he can look at like that, then it's kind of a good reminder that we all have this tendency, right? It's so easy for us to kind of say, oh, but I haven't achieved what they've achieved, or I haven't achieved the goals that I have. And so, I think that's a really useful thing to share, because I think so many people are in that position. And it's a good reminder to make sure that one of the reasons you surround yourselves with other like-minded people, entrepreneurs, etc., is not just the great ideas or the strategic challenge or whatever. It's actually validation of some of the things that you have done, so that you're able to kind of reflect and enjoy what you've got rather than always wanting more. So,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think that's really, really strong. For you then, you mentioned, you said in September, you then switched to, started the new business, and you said, you know, stupidly or not. And of course, that's a really interesting challenge, because I know with, my network that it's a really common thing that as entrepreneurs, we tend to see the new and exciting product idea, business, you know, business model, whatever. And we have a tendency to go for it regardless of whether that, you know, whether our time then could have been better spent, like just optimizing what we've got existing or whatever. However, there are, of course, times where it's the right decision. How did you make that decision? Specifically, how do you make a decision that says, okay, my youngest is off to school, I'm now going to get those 2 days back, rather than use that and double down on my existing business and try and, you know, double that, quadruple that over the next few years, instead I'm going to create something new. What was the thinking process that led to that?
I think, I mean, specifically with Stocking Fairy, it was a time issue in that it is a seasonal business. So it's something that I've been thinking about. Basically, Stocking Fairy is wrapped stocking gifts for children from toddlers to 10-year-olds. So helping parents easily find really good quality stocking fillers and then wrapping them for them. So it just ticks one of those big Christmas, you know, to-do lists,
yeah,
or to-do tasks off your list.
Definitely,
so
yeah.
It was kind of a problem that I had, you know, previously, trying to find everything for the kids. I'd have to get my mum to come and look after them so I could go to the shops and just be crazy around the shops for the day, trying to find everything, and then obviously wrapping it all. So it was kind of the idea, it came from my own problems, if you like. It was a solution to something that I wanted help with. And I think, I can't remember if it was 1 or 2 years ago that I initially came up with the idea, and then just parked it because, you know, I'm too busy, I don't have enough time, I don't know how I would, how would I even get to that point? And then as I've been full time within the business, and like you said, sort of surrounding yourself with other entrepreneurial types and just being inspired by what other people are achieving, really, I suddenly realized, I was thinking about it in the summer or early summer, actually, do you know what, if I don't do it now, if I don't get going, just try it, I'm gonna have to wait a whole extra year, and then I'll be in the same position where I'll be like, oh, I'm too busy, I'm putting it off or what have you. So I think I'd just been, I'd had some sort of mentorship and what have you, and I just thought, I've just got to do it. Otherwise, I'm the kind of person that thinks about stuff too much. I'm a perfectionist. I want too much detail on it. And then that doesn't really serve me well. So I just thought, yeah, give it a go. I think it's a good idea. I've got to put it out there and see how it goes. So obviously spent some time working out how that would work, and then launched in September. So I guess in a nutshell, it was this idea that I'd been sitting on for quite a while, but I just parked it because I knew I didn't have space for it. And then when the space became available, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to do it. It's kind of a now or never, or it's a now or in 12 months time. So yeah, so that's how it came about, I guess.
Fantastic. And there's I think there's a couple of things that I want to pull out. So the first thing is to say a massive well done, because looking over at the website at stockingfairing.com, you know, the stocking options that you've got with the gifts and the whole look and feel of the website, it's just fantastic. You know, it's
and
particularly for a business this sort of early, it's incredible. So before I go on to another question that I've got, I'd be great to understand, like, how did you get it that good that quickly? Because you know, there are, you know, even yesterday, I had an entrepreneur come up to me and ask me about, you know, oh, Alexis, you've got a software business. How do you do web design and hosting and stuff? Because we need to do a big thing around our website and so on. And I know that for them is on its own going to be a 3 to 6 month project. And yet you've built the entire business, including all of that, in a couple of months. So how did you do it?
Oh, goodness. That's really kind of you, Alexis. Thank you. Well, do you know what? I've built the website myself. So I've used Shopify. Mm-hmm. But earlier this year, I had a new site built for Books and Pieces. So I've been through the process of having a site done professionally, obviously paying out the money that warrants. And I think I've probably learned quite a lot from putting that site that's a lot more user focused together, which has helped me as I put together the Stocking Fairy site. I did pontificate for a while how I was going to, my other site operates within, I use WooCommerce on WordPress. And so I thought I would use the same, but when it got into it, it was a bit too technical and Shopify offered kind of an off the shelf solution. I do have a designer who I use for Books and Pieces. So she did some of the graphics for me for Stocking Fairy. And I did pay a small amount for a professional photographer to come and take some shots, but quite hilariously I then actually did some myself. So like the main one that you see is a reshoot that I did, and I mean I really don't have very good photography skills at all, but I think it sounds like I might have got away with it, but yeah, I was made a conscious decision not to invest too much money in Stocking Fairy at this stage, just because I'm building up money with, you know, within Books and Pieces. I don't want to then splash it right now on the new business. I'm at a stage where I want to start being able to take some money out of the business. So yeah, I've done it. I've bootstrapped it, I guess. Paid very little. I pay I think it's about $30 a month for the Shopify hosting. That's it. I've basically done it myself, Alexis.
I love that. So there's so much that I want to pull out of that, because you know, I purposefully led this particular line of questioning talking about how the risk to focus. Because actually, for most business owners, in fact, there was a couple of days ago, one that was a business owner telling me about the new thing that they wanted to do, having moved to, you know, having a successful property development business, and now they wanted to create a software company and so on. And largely the focus of that conversation was, be very, very careful, because actually, this is how, you know, this is how businesses can be lost. In fact, a good example of that is in the recent re-interview I did of James Golden, where he shared how, due to creating a new product line within an existing business, not even new business, that led to the demise of his business, so that within a relatively short period of time, a business with 10 people ended up going to administration. And so,
wow.
There are plenty of business graveyard stories of where this can go wrong. However, Here's what I love about yours, Amanda. There's a few things that you've done very differently to the examples where I've seen it go wrong. So the first is you've actually been really smart with how light you've gone with the investment in the new business, both in terms of time and money. So whereas in a lot of cases, people do the new thing bigger. You know, they say, oh, well, I've had the, you know, I've had some initial success, but it's not gone big yet. Therefore, I'm going to create a new business. But now I feel like I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to hire people in. I'm going to do all of this. And we're going to go bigger, bigger, bigger. And of course, what it does is create more risk and more damage. And the existing business isn't big enough to be able to support doing that. And you've kept your costs low and kept the risk low. So that makes a big difference. So that if it didn't work, you've lost very little. I also love the fact that you've used so much from what you've done with the other business. You know, it's a lot of the time when I talk to entrepreneurs and they're talking about setting up a new business or a new product or whatever, it's so far away from their existing, both the business and the product, but also the lessons and experiences they've learned, that it's they have to go through the learning curve all over again. Whereas yeah. you've come from a business where you're selling products online to a target audience of parents with kids, and you've created a new business selling products online to a target audience of parents with young kids. And yeah. that's where the genius is, which actually is extended even further, because I suspect, although I don't know for sure, I suspect that some of your stockings, or indeed possibly even all of them, have some presence in them that you would normally sell through your other business books and pieces. Is that accurate?
yeah. And interestingly enough on that point, Alexis, so I did a pre-launch of the stocking fairy just to test the idea. I've been doing some work with Jan Murray, and she helped. So she, this is a suggestion from her. So I did a pre-launch to my list, to my, you know, the families that are buying from me within Books and Pieces, and just to see, is it a viable idea? Is it just my idea that I think is great, or are people going to buy into it? And on a 1-day pre-launch special sale that I just did to my list, I sold 15 stockings. And what was interesting about that as well was that initially when I set up Stocking Fairy, I was only going to do it for children aged 3 and above, mm-hmm. because I figured younger kids, maybe they don't have the stocking, or parents haven't got what I've called stocking fatigue. Nice. where you know, you're just kind of like, oh my gosh, another year, more gifts to get, what am I going to put in it now? But the response from my list when I sent that first email out was, oh, we were hoping that you would do stockings for toddlers or for my 12-month-old. So straight away I said, right, okay, you want it, I will do one for you. So I added that, and that probably not quite doubled, but upped by 50% my sales on that first sales day. So actually, by speaking to my existing customer base, it identified another problem that they have, which is not so much they've got the stocking fatigue, but they just weren't sure what to put in their stockings, or they couldn't find quality products that they were happy to give to their very young children. And as you'd imagine as well, all the stockings have books in, and I have planned ahead from a stock point of view, in that I've got, for any stock that hasn't been sold through Stocking Fairy this time, I can see how it can fit within book gifting packages that I'm looking to develop within my other business next year. So there's a real crossover. A lot of my suppliers are the same, or people that I've had links with before. So it's kind of been relatively easy, although the tricky part has been really narrowing down what was going in each of the pre-packed stockings. That was probably the hardest part of it. But there's definitely a crossover. And so from that point of view, by staying within, you know, I've got the same target audience, though my age group's gone slightly up. But that's really helped to have a business that is so closely aligned, an online retailer for children's products. So it's been really helpful to have the two quite close together like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's genius. And of course, it means that all the all the periphery work that you have to do anyway around building your brand and speaking to suppliers and connecting with your target audience and, keeping your ear close to the ground and doing the market research and so on is all relevant across both. And it makes such a difference. Because I've made this mistake, sadly, multiple times before, where, I have an existing business, and then I see the shiny, exciting business that I want to do, And I, at no point consider the crossover, like where, you know, yeah, where are the overlaps? What are, you know, what is it I'm going to use? And by far the best one is having the same target customer, because apart from the answers you've demonstrated, it means you can test the new business and the new product with your existing customers. You can say, hey, got this new thing. You know, here's the problem that I believe you've got. Here's the solution that I want to offer. What do you think? And you've already got all the trust and everything in place and the contact list that allows you to test it, rather than doing the hard work of having to go and explore that market and find people and so on. So it's absolutely amazing and important to highlight the difference, because I think otherwise it'd be easy to look at this and go, oh, so, you know, Amanda uses her time and just does this balance and then sets up another business, and maybe another 12 months she'll you know, get another 2 hours available in her busy schedule and she'll just set up another one. But, you know, maybe this one will be a rival to Twitter or whatever, and it's like, no, it works because of its alignment, and that's really, really strong. So for both businesses, how have you and particularly perhaps Books and Pieces, because I know it's early days for Stocking Fairy, how do you make the business and the product stand out? Because particularly in the world of book sales and sort of discount book retailers and so on, you know, it's a crowded market. There's a lot of big players in there as well. How have you been able to kind of find your audience and make that work?
Yeah, and it is, sometimes I look back and I think, why am I taking on sellers like Amazon, who, you know, by selling books, there's little of me here operating, you know, out of my home essentially at the moment. And then, you know, people can just go online and buy the books on Amazon or what have you. But I think for me, what I wanted to do was, or I like to think of myself as, I've got Amazon prices, but with the customer service that you'd expect at a, you know, a high street bookshop. So books, people are quite overwhelmed by when they have young children or have babies. They know they should be having books in their life. They know it's important, but they don't know. They've not read children's books before. You know, it's been 20 or 30 years since they last read any kids' books. And so they don't know what to get. And so what I do is, I'm really, really particular in my sourcing of books. I only pick books that I would read with my own children. So whereas you get some discount sellers who it's just, you know, pile them up, sell them cheap.
Yeah, whatever stock's available.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll take it because I can make however much on that. For me, I only buy stock that I know I can sell. So what I find now is, I've been doing the baby show. So I do up to about 8 big baby shows every year, which is a great opportunity for me. Obviously, being an online retailer, it's really brilliant to go and see my customers face to face. And so now I'm at the point where people are coming back and they're saying, oh my gosh, we loved the books that you picked for 6-month-old Johnny last time. What books would you recommend now that he's 12 months old, or now that he's 18 months? So I think what I've been able to do by being visible is get a real trust from people. So, it's so lovely as a business owner, because, you know, here you are trying to build a business, doing what you hope is good and regularly questioning yourself. But to have that endorsement from your customers who are, you know, coming back, buying more, really pleased, telling you about the, you know, how much they love the book, sending you photos, it really makes a difference. And I think as well, I've made my, reluctantly at first, but I've made myself the face of my business. You know, so you've got these big discount sellers, Amazon, The Works, or The Book People, or what have you. But they're very much just churning, they're about the churning the books out. Whereas for me, obviously, I want to build a business that is going to help, you know, support my family and what we want to do. But also, I want people to have a love of books. I want the kids to grow up loving and enjoying books. And also, what's really important is, I want the parents to enjoy reading them, because a lot of these books that you can get out there, especially the discount ones, are just hideous to read. And they're the kind that you want to just accidentally throw in the bin or leave at grandma's. Whereas for me, it's as much about parents enjoying reading the books with their children and having the opportunity to read different books and showing people how they can read with their kids, you know, as much as obviously just physically having a book. So yeah, I'm not even sure, Alexis, if I've answered your question there, but I guess it's about having personal service and I guess a passion for what I'm selling. And that's how I believe I'm standing out, because I don't think, certainly on a discount price, I don't really think there's anyone else doing it the way that I'm doing it.
Completely, and you've answered it really well. And until you summarized just then, not by like what, like specifically what you said, but how you said it. So for me, when you started off saying, oh, well, it's, you know, we're based in discount prices, but with the customer service of a bookstore, I kind of go, oh, okay, you know, okay, that kind of makes sense. But the bit that really clicks for me is when I hear your why, the passion that you have for the really good books that you know, that parents enjoy with their kids, that the kids really enjoy, because we know that as parents, we know that we have these, you know, big boxes of books, and there are a handful that both are a joy for the parent to read, and that the kids really enjoy, and that they want to come back to again and again, and that there's the rest of the box is the you know, the other books, and that's very frustrating. And I think you know, you could say, oh, well, you can use reviews and so on, but often that doesn't quite get you there. Whereas tapping in and identifying someone like yourself who's super passionate about it, and that, you know, I can imagine following your content and your posts on social media and so on, and also really finding that once I've bought, you know, some books from you and they've all been wins, like not wanting to go anywhere else. And I think that is what makes the big difference for you, like that why that you have about really caring about it, you know, rather than just like, yeah, so my clever business model is I just go and get a load of books that no one else could sell, and I sell them for 50%, and people want to buy them because people need to buy things for people, right? And it's like, it makes all the difference. You know, it's like when I interviewed Steph Douglas from Don't Buy Her Flowers. Like, that why behind why she believes that buying flowers for someone, particularly, you know, immediately after they've had a baby or whatever, why that's a bad idea and actually isn't that thoughtful, and there are plenty of really good opportunities, is what creates that connection with her audience and a group of people that don't think, oh, well, I can just buy the same thing, but I can go on Amazon and, you know, or whatever, and have more choice. It's they're buying because they get her and her ethos and her passion. And I think that's a really strong point for you. And a really good lesson for all of us as entrepreneurs. Is that fair?
Yeah. And I think for me, what I've learned, because there have been times, you know, in the past where I've bought books that maybe I haven't liked so much, but because I feel, and you know, I feel that there's the market for them, or customers have been asking for them. And I just find often they sit there because I'm not so passionate about them. So, if people are asking for advice or recommendations, I probably wouldn't point to them. Yeah. And so it's just, you know, part of your business journey, if you like, it's been about just, you know, only sell, even if someone else is selling something and it looks really popular, just only sell what you are happy to sell. And also I'm really, you know, I'm quite price conscious anyway, as a shopper and just generally in life. So what I will often check as well, if I have opportunity to buy a product, if I can see that someone else is bashing it out at, you know, not very much, I just won't buy it, because I would actually almost rather say to the customer, do you know what, you can go and get it over there for not a lot at all. So I'd rather you did that. Yes. Which is probably, you know, it's not really probably very good business sense in a lot of ways, but I just want to be true to myself and how I am, and true to my business. And that, again, it's a lesson learned, isn't it? Over time, as you grow your business and your business identity and your brand and what have you, it's just one of those things now that I'm very picky, and I'll only buy things if I really know that it's awesome value for my customers.
That's really strong. And this wasn't a view that you held strongly, but I disagree that it's bad business sense for you to be making those decisions, because I think the difference it makes for A, you know, your ability to sell, but B, like the value that your customers get, you know, like the example where you said, well, if I can see it's being, if it's available at really low cost elsewhere, then I have generally decided it's better to refer people to those people rather than trying to stock it myself at a slightly higher price. I think that, no, that's a really good play, because it means that your customers know that they're not going to get fleeced by you. And that, and that you will try and help. And of course, that's a big part of, you know, when you talk about the customer service, that's a big part of it. You know, customer service is basically helping, is about understanding the customer and then solving their problems. And so if solving their problem means referring them somewhere else, then that can be a really good decision, particularly in the long term. So, yeah, I think that's amazing. And it's interesting, because I think there's a balance of some stuff that I think just kind of clearly just comes innately to you, which is really nice. Like you're, and I guess it comes from that passion as well. I think it comes from the fact that you clearly care and that makes a really, really big difference. So I want to move on to a couple of other areas because otherwise we're going to run short on time. It's been amazing. But let's go into specifically about reading books with kids and so on, because it's a funny one, right? Generally, most of us feel like, you know, do you enjoy reading books with kids? And the answer is, yeah, actually, generally, yes. Certain books and certain repetitions of them might start to grate. But generally, it's a really nice thing to do. But on the flip side, of course, finding the time can be hard, particularly in the busy school week and whatever, and trying to balance work and other social engagements. And particularly this time of year, because we're recording this in early December, as we, you know, start to hit office Christmas parties and seeing multiple groups of families and everything. So
yeah.
What are your kind of tips on sort of enjoying reading with the kids more and being able to find that time? You know, what's kind of tended to work for you and for your customers?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really very much for people, you know, not necessarily following a specific routine, or it's not a one size fits all approach, you know, with reading books or with parenting, I guess. It's about fitting it into looking at how you might fit it into your daily routine. So for us, obviously, we'd read, and, you know, people know it's really good to incorporate reading a book into your bedtime routine. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously helps with your children to help them wind down and what have you. But really, it's looking at any opportunity in the day that you can read a book with your little ones. So, you know, obviously, I've mentioned I've got the three boys and life can be a bit crazy. But the minute that I get a book out and sit on the sofa with one of them, they flock. It's like this magnet. They all flock to me. They come and sit down and peace is restored. And so, you know, it's kind of quite magical for us reading books and things. But it's looking at how you can incorporate books into your day to day. So maybe there's a quiet period before, you know, in the morning, perhaps you've got a slight lull, or before you even get ready for breakfast, when you might laze in bed, if you like, and read a book with your little one. And it might be that you've got books in your own room that you are there on hand to share with them. Or it might be that they bring one to you. I know when we have family staying, they typically get bombarded by my boys at probably about half six in the morning with a whole selection of books that they're then forced to read to them. But yeah, it's working out how you can fit it into your day, not feeling the pressure to fit it into your day. You know, reading one book a week is better than reading none. But obviously, if you can read daily, then you're going to see massive benefits from that. But even taking cues from your own kids. So what do they enjoy? What are they really liking? And then can you find a book? And it might be you go to your library or you speak to friends to see if they've got books that fit a theme. And then using that to talk about a situation, or, you know, perhaps they've got an interest in bugs. Well, there's some great books on bugs that you could share together, whether that's a non-fiction book or a story book, or using it as a starting point for an activity. I mean, there's so much inspiration on Instagram and Pinterest for book-based activities that you can do with your little ones. So you don't even feel that you have to sit and read a book from front to end. It might even be that you look at a page and you talk about what you can see on that page, or it's the opener for a discussion. Or my kids love spotting books. So it's look and find books. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen those, Alexis.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those are really great fun, because, again, when you think about a book, you think of it being a story and you must read the story. We're programmed as adults, so you must read a story from the start to the end. You can't, you know, pop in halfway. You can't just look at a page. But actually, if you think differently around kids' books, you don't need to read it from the start to the end. You could open a page. You could just talk about what you can see on that page. You can make up a story based on the pictures if for example, you're short on time. But with the spotting books, for example, and these are kind of books where you've got a look and find element. So it might be something as simple as a storybook where there's a little ladybird to find on every mm-hmm. page, or it might be a whole page with multiple things to find. You know, can you find five monkeys? Can you spot the policeman or what have you? And, you know, those are the kind of books you're sharing a book. So these are particularly good for kids that maybe are slightly more reluctant readers. Mm. So you can just sit and look and see what you can spot on the page. And my kids, if you've got, obviously got more than one child, they might make it into a competition, or they might challenge each other or challenge you. But yeah, I mean, there is so much that you can do with books, taking them out with you, giving them to your children in the car, having them when you're at the doctor's surgery waiting and having that moment to share a book together, turning off the TV 5 minutes earlier than you might do otherwise to get a book out and share that together. And it's just what you get back from it, that interaction with your children and the learning that you get. Like, I never set out to share. I've shared books with my kids because we love books. I've loved books as a kid. I think it's great quality time to spend with your little ones. But now they're all at school, the feedback from their teachers is it's, you know, it's really obvious you read a lot of books with them. Their imagination is amazing. Their vocabulary is great. Their storytelling is brilliant. And that's not anything that I set out to do. You know, I'm not a tiger mum, but it's a really happy outcome of just sharing books with them.
Love it. Yeah, absolutely love it. And there was so much that I took from that. But the one thing that makes me immediately want to change my routines and so on at home is that I think what we've tended to do is try and read literally just like that. You know, it's, oh, you're bathed, you've got pajamas on, you brush your teeth. Okay, now you can have a book before then going to sleep. And actually, I love the idea of doing it before all of that. Because as you say, when you sit down the sofa, and the kids then flock to you and then relax, which then actually makes the bedtime routine a lot easier. So,
definitely.
You know, whereas what tends to happen is the bedtime routine has been so exhausting. The idea of then reading three books that my children might request rather than the one I've promised them feels too much of a push. I can already feel that's going to be life changing for me. So, and I'm sure there are many people that are going to have taken lots from that as well. So, that's been amazing. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I do want to ask one other question, which is because of your love of books, what about for adults? You know, it is people who listen to this podcast a lot know that I'm very keen on books, tend to read about, you know, one a week, or if I'm not listening to books, then I'm listening to podcasts and so on. I do have paper books, but generally I'm listening to audiobooks. Are there particular books and so on that you've really enjoyed as an adult, or is your love focused for children's books?
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I love reading as well, and I'm part of a book group actually, so which has been great for me because it's encouraged me to read different types of books. So typically I love a bit of you lose your brain, chiclets, rubbish, but having been part of the book club, you know, read all sorts of books, but I've actually got a bit of a penchant for a thriller. I do like a good thriller at the minute. Or I've been really enjoying Leanne Moriarty's books, which are probably a little bit chick lit, but just easy reading. And then some intersperse that with a few business books. But then that can just make your head spin a little bit. So I read every day, and I enjoy just switching off with a good book. But on the flip side, I have had some hideous books in book club. And whereas before I would try and plough through and read them to the end, I now decide life's too short. So, so if you start a book and you really don't like it, just can it. just find something you love and that you enjoy and that's an easy read, and read that would be my advice.
So thank you so much for your time today, Amanda. It's been awesome talking to you, and the progress that you've made with both of your businesses has been absolutely inspirational to hear about. I'm going to make sure in our show notes that we link to Books and Pieces, which is booksandpieces.com, and stockingfairy.com. I'm also going to include some links to some other articles and podcast episodes that you've been involved in, including Janet Murray's, who you mentioned earlier in the episode. So I'll include those links in the show notes. Any other resources or ways in which you'd recommend that people reach out if they'd like to learn more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I do have, if you've got young children aged under six and you'd like to know more about sharing books with them, then you can join my Early Years Book Group on Facebook, which is free, and it's a platform for parents to ask questions around books, share ideas, activities that they've been doing that are book related. So I definitely suggest that people go there. And you're welcome to email me, amanda@bookspieces.com, if you had any questions or feedback.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I'll make sure that we provide both of those on the show notes. But thank you again so much for your time, Amanda. It's been awesome. And I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Cheers, Alexis.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have taken away some ideas that you can put into practice. You can find the links to any resources mentioned in this episode over on the show notes at parentpreneur.com/podcast. If you found this podcast useful, then please review it on iTunes. 5-star review ratings would absolutely make my day. Also, please join the conversation on this episode. Just head over to the Parentpreneur Accelerator community on Facebook, where you'll find other parentpreneurs that are sharing their experiences and helping each other to succeed. To find the group, just visit parentpreneur.com/community. Thanks very much.